we'll make a start. So it's Parshas Emor, which is a special parsha because it comes between, always becomes between Pesach and Shavuot. And it also has the mitzvah of counting the Omer. It has the parsha, one of the times in the Torah where it covers all the festivals, which obviously between two festivals. Yesterday we had Pesach Sheni, so that's connected as well, of course. And this week is a special week. That's also Lag BaOmer this coming Friday. So if we have time at the end, we'll cover something to do with Lag BaOmer as well. So I just thought we'd start with a bit of an overview of the parsha. So really, the parsha starts with very much the theme of the book of Vayikra, which is Kohanim and Karbonis and so on. So it talks about the mitzvahs of the Kohanim, that they cannot become impure, which is why, of course, even today, they're not supposed to intentionally impurify themselves. That's why at a funeral, we know the Kohanim stay in a different room and so on. Also, who they're allowed to marry, who they're not allowed to marry. The Kohanim have certain restrictions, which are different to other people. We have the section that talks about a Kohen who's a Balmum, a Kohen who has a blemish, is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Those Kohanim that had blemishes, they did have certain functions in... They had functions in the Beis HaMikdash. They would do certain things. Also, we know that korbanos, sacrifices, in this week's parasha says that the animals cannot be blemished. Animals have to be perfect. Not allowed to have a blemish. And the Torah enumerates all the blemishes that create a problem. In fact, there's two kinds, we are told. There's something called a mum over, which means a temporary blemish, like a wound or something, which could disqualify the animal being a korban, but then can be better, and the animal can then become eligible again. And then there are those that are permanent, and it's just not eligible. Also, the prohibition about not eating or not bringing a korban when you are tomei, when you're impure. Other mitzvah to do with when or what age an animal becomes eligible for a korban. Then there's a pasuk in this week's parasha, which also is a very famous pasuk, and it's a very important mitzvah. It says, "V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael," I become holy, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, making a sanctifying God's name, which happens on two levels. First of all, there's the general concept about behaving in a way which brings honor to Hashem's name, but then there's the specific mitzvah of sometimes we're actually obligated to give up our life for the sake of Hashem, right? Particularly when it's in public and when it's the three cardinal sins and so on and so forth. Then we have the parsha of the festivals, the Moedim, which deals with the Yom Tovim and some of the sacrifices that are brought in those festivals, on those festivals. We have the mitzvah of Shemen Zayzoch, pure olive oil for the menorah. Lechem Aponim, the parasha to do with the 12 showbreads that used to go on the Shulchan every week. And then at the end of the parasha, we have the parashas HaMakalil, the parasha to do with a person who came publicly and blasphemed and cursed Hashem, so to speak, and that he was put to death. It was capital punishment, and the Torah tells that story at the end of the parasha. So it's not such a long parasha, but it's pretty action-packed, right? So what I wanted to do is to look at some aspects of the section of the parasha that deals with the festivals. And as I said, if we have time, we'll also learn something to do with Lag BaOmer. So first of all, let's have a look at how the mitzvah of the Omer, of counting the Omer, actually comes in. So have a look at number one, first of all. The Torah starts off by saying, Eile Moyadei Hashem, these are the festivals Hashem Mikro'i Kodesh, special occasions, Asher Tikru Oysem Moedem, which you have to celebrate and call each one at its particular time. It starts with Pesach, just to give you a little bit of an idea. B'chodesh HaRishon Ba'arba Osel L'chodesh Bein HaRbaim, the first month, i.e. the month of Nisan, the 14th of the month, Pesach LaHashem. We're talking about the Erev Pesach, first of all. In other words, it's Pesach LaHashem. But you know, it's interesting that the Torah doesn't call the festival of Pesach Pesach, right? When the Torah talks about Pesach here, it's talking about Erev Pesach, the time you bring the Korban Pesach, the sacrifice to Hashem. Here.
No problem. It's a JNF function.
Okay. That explains to me. Okay. So, when it says here that the 14th of the month is Pesach, it means the 14th of Nisan is when you bring the Korban Pesach. Then says the Torah at the end of number one, V'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh hazeh, on the 15th of this month, Chag HaMatzos LaHashem, it should be the festival of Matzos, because that's the way the Torah calls Pesach, not Pesach, it calls it Chag HaMatzos. Shivas yomim matzos techeilu, you shall eat matzah for 7 days. Okay. Then, a few psukim later, number two on the handout, we learn about the Omer. But the Omer has two parts. I just want to make this clear. When we talk about the Omer, we always think about counting the Omer, right? But that wasn't the whole picture. The counting of the Omer came in continuation to a korban, a sacrifice, a flower offering that was called the Omer, right? Let's learn it. It says, "Vaydaber Hashem u'Moshe Leimer," and Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, "Daber el b'nei Yisrael ve'amarta aleim," speak to the Jewish people and tell them, "Ki sovoyu el ha'aretz," when you come to the land, "asher ani noisein lachem," which I will give you, "uketzartem es ketzira," you will reap the harvest. And what should you do? "V'heivesem es oimer reishis ketzirchem el ha'kohen," you need to bring the first sheaf, the first measurement of flour to the kohen. "V'heinif es ha'oimer lifnei Hashem," and the kohen will take that flour from the first measurement, lifnei Hashem, before God, l'ritzoinchem, he will wave it to be accepted on your behalf. When will he wave it? When is this flour offering brought, which, by the way, was barley flour? When was it brought? "Mimocharas ha-Shabbos," the day after Shabbos, which we know means the day after. No, it wasn't Chavos. It was harvest.
Just harvested barley.
Yeah, and then what happened was, so that's a good question. So just for those who may be on Facebook, just to explain the question. He's asking why, if it's flour, isn't it an issue of chametz, because it was brought on Pesach, right? No, so first of all, it was pure flour. Now, when we buy flour in the store, the flour itself is chametz, because it's not washed and it's wet and it's been washed and all that. But when they prepared flour for the Beis HaMikdash, it was done carefully, right? Then if they mixed it with any oil or anything that they used to bring the flour offerings, it was made sure that it wouldn't become chametz, not only on Pesach. Generally, all flour offerings in the Beis HaMikdash was kosher Pesach. Only with the exception of the only time there was chametz, there were only two times in the Beis HaMikdash there was chametz. Only two times. One is on Shavuos. On Shavuos there was a korban called the Shtei HaLechem, the two breads, which were intentionally made chametz, right? And then there's a korban called the korban toida, the Thanksgiving offering, right? Which was brought when people had to give thanks to Hashem for traveling, for becoming well, for getting out of jail, whatever, like we say, agomel today, right? That kind of thing. So they used to bring a korban toida. The korban toida was an animal, but came with lots of different breads that the Torah says you have to make. Some of those breads had to intentionally be chametz. Otherwise, everything else was matzah. Including the showbreads, the lechem aponim, which the Torah talks about this week's parasha, which was, sorry? Matzah. No, matzah. Now, wasn't matzah like we eat matzah. We're not sure how to make matzah properly, so we make us thin and hard and you know, hence the cuisine taste. But those days they could make matzah thick, it was soft, it was regular bread, but it tasted different, but it just didn't rise. Right, but they knew how to make it. Just on that note about the korban toda, that's why, you know, in davening there's a paragraph we say, like a little bit before Ashrei, before Yichvod, we say Mizmor LaToda every day in Shacharis. We don't say it on Shabbos Niyantav, obviously, because the korban toda was not brought on Shabbos Niyantav. We also don't say it on Pesach, including Erev Pesach. Right? You know, in even the Chol HaMoed of Pesach, we don't say Mizmor LaToda.
Is it in English?
It's the Song of Thanksgiving. It's two paragraphs before Ashrei. And the reason we don't say it on Pesach is because it wasn't brought the whole Pesach, because it had to be chametz. Even a Chol HaMoed, if someone wanted to bring a korban toda, he couldn't, because it was a chametz. Yeah, does that answer your question? Yeah. So, the Torah says, this Omer flour that was brought to the Kohen and was waved, I guess is the right word, in the Beis HaMikdash, when was it brought? Mimocharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos, which is not Sunday, necessarily. It means the day after the first day of Pesach, that's what it means, right? Yenifenu HaKohen. So, second day Pesach, which in Israel is not Yontif, it's Chol HaMoed, so it's the day after Yontif, that's when they used to bring the Korban Todah. And then the Torah says in number three, the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'imer. Usafartem lochem mimocharas HaShabbos, you shall count for yourselves from the day after Shabbos. Again, it means the day after Yontif. From the day you bring this Omer flower offering, the waved offering, you shall count Sheva Shabbosois Tamimois Tiyena, 7 complete weeks. Yeah? Go on the other page. Ad Mimochras HaShabbos HaShviz, until the day after the seventh week, Tishbur Chamishim Yoim, you should count 50 days, and then we craftem mincha chadosha l'Hashem, and then you should bring a whole new korban to Hashem, which was brought on Shavuos. That was a wheat offering. And that was the festival of Shavuos on the 50th day. Just to explain why they're both called new offerings. So the way it used to work is like this. In the Beis HaMikdash, when they would grow produce, any wheat or barley that was grown after Rosh Hashanah, meaning that was harvested after Rosh Hashanah, was not used for sacrifice. Sacrifice was from the old wheat, right? Because the first new barley carbon was second day Pesach, the Omer, the first new wheat carbon was Shavuos, right? So the barley one was brought Mimachrat HaShabbos the day after the Pesach, and then we count 7 weeks of the Omer. That's what the Torah says. Now, we'll come back to this because the Torah then says something very interesting, but we'll come back to that in a minute. I just want to sort of pick up on this phrase Mimachrat HaShabbos. So first of all, the day after Shabbos. We know that this was, we explained this before, this phrase in the Torah that the Omer should be brought and that the counting of the Omer should begin Mimachrat HaShabbos the day after Shabbos was the cause of big strife. It's one of the most painful phrases, so to speak, in the Torah, because it caused huge problems. The problems that it caused was, particularly in the Second Temple, when you had the movement of Tzedukim, the movement of the Sadducees who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, the Oral Torah, and they said, day after Shabbos is day after Shabbos. So Pesach comes out on a Tuesday, you don't start counting the Omer till Sunday. So Shavuos is always on a Sunday, according to them, right? Now, we also have Shavuos on a Sunday sometimes, but it's when Pesach falls around a Shabbos. But that doesn't always happen, right? Anyway, that was a very big machlokeh, it was huge, and therefore, but we believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, and of course, Omer starts the second day Pesach, nothing to do with Sunday, right? By the way, they went so far as to say, there was a whole debate recorded in the Gemara between the Prushim, the Sanhedrin, and the Tzedukim, that some old guy from the Tzedukim wanted to say that, no, it must be on Sunday, because he says, Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jewish people, and therefore he wanted always to start the Omer on a Sunday in order to make sure that Shavuos should be on a Sunday, basically to paraphrase the Gemara, to give the Jews a long weekend, right? So it should be should be 2 days Yantif, right? It should be Shabbos and then Shavuos. Of course, that's nonsense, and it's on the Shabbos. Now, the obvious question is, why does the Torah refer to the second day Pesach as the day after Shabbos, right? So I saw a couple of interesting things I'll just share with you. One is that actually there's a little bit of a... Normally, Shabbos and Yom Tov are very different, right? But there is a similarity between Pesach and Shabbos, Pesach specifically, in two ways. One way is... A number of ways, but these are two examples. One way, on Shabbos, we have this prohibition of carrying, right? Which we don't have on Yom Tov. Yeah? The only Yom Tov we find something similar about carrying is Pesach. In which way? That when they used to bring the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach, and they took it home, and there was a number of registered people who would gather together to eat that particular animal, there was a prohibition to carry the meat out of the house. That's one, right? You weren't allowed to take it out. They had to remain in, and some of the ways that the halacha was structured in terms of how you're not allowed to and how you are guilty of that transgression of carrying the meat of the Korban Pesach outside the house was very similar to the laws of carrying on Shabbos. So there's an interesting combination. The other is the interesting thing. We know that Shabbos is called it's called a sign between the Jewish people and Hashem. It's a very specific, intimate connection between Hashem and the Jewish people, so much so that although a non-Jew is permitted to keep other mitzvahs, we have in the Gemara this concept that a non-Jew may not keep Shabbos. You know that? So much so that it's a practice among many, many people who are learning from conversion even, that while they are supposed to train and keep Shabbos, but they're actually supposed to do one thing on Shabbos to break Shabbos until they actually become Jewish. Right? Because you don't actually keep Shabbos properly, because Shabbos is very exclusive. Now, the same thing we find with Pesach in a way. Because although we find in the Gemara that there are this idea of bringing korbanos, of bringing sacrifices, that there are sacrifices that non-Jews could also bring. In times of the temple, there were sacrifices that non-Jews would bring. Right? If they wanted to bring a korban to Hashem, they could, but not the korban Pesach. The korban Pesach was specifically about the Jewish redemption between the Jews and Hashem, and therefore, so there are some similarities. But another thought that perhaps we could also suggest of why the Torah refers to Pesach on Shabbos and talks about the Omer being the day after Shabbos has to do with the whole purpose of the Omer altogether. And we know we've talked about this many times, but it's spoken about by many people. I just saw recently the Barditch Barov, the Kedushas Levi talks about it. And he says very simple. He says, we know that Pesach is all about the miracles that Hashem did for us, right? And of course, when the Jews left Egypt on Pesach, there was this tremendous hit ororot, how do you translate it, ororot? Awakening, right? Tremendous inspiration, tremendous awakening of the Jewish people that they were taken out by Hashem. The problem is, it all came from Hashem. The whole point of Sefirah Sa'omer, as we know, is that it should become our awakening. So the first day of Pesach, it was God's gift to us, that awakening. The whole Omer is then to, it should become our awakening. Like he says, for example, the first week of the Omer is Chesed. Chesed is that we should conjure up, we should internalize a love for Hashem. The second week is more the fear of Hashem. We should internalize fear of Hashem. And so on and so forth, right? So that's the concept of Sefirah Sa'omer, which also explains perhaps, therefore, why the Torah calls it the day after Shabbos, and it emphasizes the point. One of the things that we know that is different between Shabbos and Yom Tov, generally speaking, is that Shabbos has nothing to do with us. Nothing. Shabbos happens. Whether we make a calendar, we don't make a calendar, Shabbos just happens. It happens from the creation of the world. It's been happening every 7 days since Hashem created the world. The Kedusha of Shabbos is Mekatcha B'Kayim, which is why in our tefillot, in our prayers on Shabbos, we say Baruch Atah Hashem, and end of Kiddush as well, we say Mekadesh HaShabbos. Hashem sanctifies the Shabbos. Yom Tov is a bit different. Yom Tov, we have what to do with it because we have to make a calendar. The calendar means we have to proclaim Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is what determines the holiness of the month. It determines when the month is going to happen. And therefore, the holiness of the Yom Tov kicks in according to the way we make the calendar, right? Which is why on Yom Tov, in the Kiddush and our davening, we say Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. Hashem sanctifies the Jewish people and the festivals, right? Here once again, the Yom Tov that is closest to Shabbos, not in its legal structure, but in its concept, is Pesach. Pesach is that one Yom Tov that we didn't do anything. We left Egypt, but we weren't ready to leave Egypt. Hashem schlepped us out of Egypt. Hashem awakened us. Hashem took us out, right? Comes along the Torah. That's why it's a little bit like Shabbos. Says the Torah that the whole purpose of counting the Omer, which it says in this week's parasha, Usafartem Lachem, you have to count. Lachem means you have to count. It has become your awakening. Mimocharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos. Meaning, yesterday was Shabbos. Yesterday was a gift. In other words, the first day of Pesach is always called the Shabbos. In that way. Because it's a gift from Hashem. It just happened. It happened when nothing to do with us. Says the Torah, now it's up to you. Mimocharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos, you need to make it happen. So that's another understanding. You said the dates, but the concept of Shabbos, the concept of, yeah, you said the date now of Pesach, because after the Torah was given, all the festivals we have to make. But still, the concept of Pesach is more that gift from above, which is a Shabbos-type idea, which explains why the similarities between Pesach and Shabbos, even though it's a Yom Tov and we have to do it. But, and then the Omer is, it's emphasized, the message there is very clear in the words. Mimocharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos. That's got to be the day after the awakening, but now, Usafartem Lachem, you have to make it yours. Which, by the way, also interesting. It reflects in a very interesting halacha, by the way. I'll just bring it in just quickly. This idea, how much the Omer is a concept of a connection to Hashem becoming internalized and becoming ours, is reflected in how we have to work for it, right? That's the whole idea of Omer. We're not given to, we have to work for it, right? We were given it on Pesach, but then we have to work for it. It reflects in a very interesting halachic issue to do with Pesach, Omer, which is a very interesting idea. You know, with lots of other mitzvahs, we have, like for example, I'll give you Kiddush, for example, right? Kiddush on Friday night, or Kiddush on Yom Tov, for that matter, also. Everyone is obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush, right? But does everyone practically have to say Kiddush? No. Because we have this mechanism in halacha called Shomea Ko'ena. You can be Yoitze. Reitze means Yoitze, you can listen to someone else, and you have in mind, and you cover it. It's like as if you're saying it, right? That's how most of us make Kiddush Friday night. One person makes Kiddush or two people, whatever. And the rest of us are Yoitz, so we listen, and it's like we have made it ourselves, right? There's a halacha that with Omer you shouldn't do that. You can't do that. Which is strange, because we could do it with Megillah, you could do it with the Torah reading, you could do it with Kiddush. But if it's the 15th night that I say loud, and you listen to me, and I say tonight is the 15th night of the Omer, etc., etc., right? And you listen and you have in mind, it doesn't work. You have to do it yourself. Now, there's a very interesting halachic analysis, which is not for now, why that is, halachic on a halachic level. But philosophically, it's an interesting concept. It highlights this point, that the whole idea of the Omer is you just got to do it yourself. You can't be yotzef from someone else. No one can do it for you. You've got to do it yourself. That's an interesting idea. Okay. Good.
Do you think, first of all, in the Shabbat lunches, where people are making their own Kiddush?
So notwithstanding you could be yotzef the Kiddush, there are some families have a minag that all the males make Kiddush themselves. It's particularly Hasidic minag. In the non-Hasidic world, always one person makes. But in the Hasidic world, most males make their own Kiddush.
I also never see women. I'm on my own. If I sit there, I do make Kiddush.
You should. You should make Kiddush. Not only you can, but you should. It's an obligation. Women have an obligation to make Kiddush. Yeah. It doesn't have to be on 14% wine. It could be on grape juice. But
sure.
I just don't want to scare anyone away here. But, I mean, if you want, it could be on 40% wine. But it doesn't have to be. Yeah, no, you should. Friday night and Shabbos day. Both. Because it's a mitzvah on women as well. Just normally, the tradition is the man makes the kiddush, the woman is yoitza, but... By the way, it works with candles also. The opposite way around. Candles are mitzvah on everyone to light. Just the tradition is that the woman lights and covers the men. And if there's no woman in the house, my wife travels, I light candles. Right? So it goes both ways. Sorry? Yeah, Kiddush, same thing. No, 100% should be like 100%. Okay, now, when the Torah says the Pesach and the Omer and all that, right? And then suddenly, the Torah interrupts. This is what we're going to go through now a little bit. Interesting thing. We've got number four. The Torah interrupts the flow of talking about the festivals. It comes back to it. It comes back to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and so on. But it interrupts it with another mitzvah altogether. I mean, it's contextually similar because it's talking about harvesting a field, but it's not one of the festivals. Says the Pasuk, number four. Uvekutzrichem es ktsir artzichem. And when you reap the harvest of your land, right? Lo yisachale pa'asodeh bekutzrecha. Do not harvest the entire corner, which means don't harvest the whole field. Because there's a mitzvah in the Torah called peah. Peah means you have to leave a corner. You have to leave a little bit for the poor people. Also, the leket ktzirchach. And also the gleanings, all the little stalks that fall down on the floor when you're harvesting. Lo yisalaket, you shouldn't pick up, you shouldn't collect. Why? La'oni velager ta'azoiv oisam. You shall leave it for the poor person, essentially. For the stranger, for the poor person. Ani Hashem alakech, right? Now that's a general mitzvah. It's got nothing to do with the Omer. It's got nothing to do with anything. It's got to do with agricultural mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which is a mitzvah, an agricultural mitzvah in the Torah. When you harvest a field, actually three things in a field. Pe'ah, which is you leave a corner unharvested for the poor people. Leket, the stalks that fall down. And shikha. Shikha means when you bundle it and put it into sheaves and you happen to forget two sheaves in the field. Three you can go back for, but if you get two, you're not allowed to go back for it. You have to leave it for the poor people. Okay. That just comes in the middle. And then when the Torah has finished this, it goes back to the festivals, continues on with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and so on. Yep. Now, just to make it clear, this is not the only time the Torah says this mitzvah. This mitzvah was already in last week's parasha, right? Parashas Kedoshim, which talks a lot about the agricultural mitzvahs. And let's read it. We had it in last week's parasha, Parashas Kedoshim, number 5 on your handout. Uvekutzrichem es ktsir artzichem, when you harvest your land, loisachale pa'asotcha liktzor, do not finish the corner, velecha ktsircha loisalakeit, and don't take the gleanings of your harvest, in other words, the things you drop down, don't take them, leave them for the poor people. Same, the next pasuk says the same thing. Tazavoisam, leave them for the poor people, and they'll come and collect them. Right? So I'm going to show you what Rashi says in a moment. Before I do that, I'm going to share with you what some of the other Mefarshim say. Because the obvious question is, and all the Mefarshim ask this question, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, the Kli Yoker, the Chizkuni, and so on and so forth, they all ask this question, what is the mitzvah of Peah? This mitzvah of leaving the corn of the field and the wheat for the poor people, what's it doing in the middle of the festivals? Right? There's a section in the Torah in this week's parasha where the Torah begins. By the way, it's a very formal section. Torah begins, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, please go and tell them all about the Yomim Tovim. mentions Shabbos festival, and then it says, Eila Moyade Hashem, these are the festivals. I'm going to give you now a list of the festivals with their sacrifices, right? And in the middle of the section, the Torah inserts the mitzvah of not fully harvesting the field, leaving the stuff for the poor people. And all the Mefarshim want to know why. Yeah? Let me share with you what some of the other Mefarshim say. The Evan Ezra says, very simple. Because the Torah was talking about the Omer. The Torah was talking about Shavuos. Shavuos, we know when the Shavuos come, it comes in the season of harvest, right? In fact, one of the names, the many names given to the festival of Shavuos coming up in a few weeks, one of the names is, you know what it is? Chag HaKatzir, the festival of harvest, right? So there's an Ezra, the Torah is talking about the time of harvest. The festival of harvest, Torah says, don't forget, when you're harvesting, there's the mitzvah of harvesting. There's the mitzvah of leaving stuff for the poor people. That's what the Evan Ezra says. Cheskuni says a similar thing. Okay. Then you have the Ramban and some of the other Mefarshim, Kli Yoker or Achaim. I say it a bit differently, but they all say something to this effect. They also know, I say it like this. The Torah says that on the second day of Pesach, you've got to harvest the field, and you can't take the whole field for you. You say, you've got to take some of it and bring a korban, the korban of Omer, right? So you might think, listen, the Torah last week gave us a mitzvah of harvesting the field. Torah says you got to leave stuff for the poor people. You can't take the whole corner. You got to leave the corner for the poor people. You got to leave the stuff that falls down for the poor people. All this kind of stuff, right? You might think that the field which you use to harvest the barley for the Omer is an exception. Since anyways you have to give part of this field to Hashem, because you got to take the Omer, the barley for the korban, you might think this field is exempt from those agricultural mitzvahs. Comes along the Torah and says, no, it's not exempt. Okay. Those are some of the Mefarshim, what they say. Rashi, now, what's fascinating is, and we've discussed Rashi many times, the function of Rashi is always to explain the Pshat, right? So therefore, if there's different ways to explain a problem in a Pasuk, you would imagine that Rashi takes the one that would be nearest to the Pshat, right? The truth is, what the Evan Ezra says, and even what the Ramban says in the Mefarshim, seem to be very logical pshat in the pasuk. You know, it's the festival of harvest, or it says, don't forget, the mitzvah of harvest. There's a field to do with the Omer, maybe which thinks it's exempt, it's not exempt. Good. Rashi takes a whole nother track altogether, almost like a role reversal. We have Mefarshim like the Ramban and the Arachaim, same things that are more pshat, and Rashi coming with this beautiful pshat, but it doesn't seem to be anything close to pshat, right? Oh, on the surface, at least. Let's see Rashi number 6. So I want to learn with you 3 points that Rashi makes. Says Rashi, Uva Kutzrechem. Rashi comments in the beginning about the fact that the Torah is now bringing this mitzvah of harvesting, of leaving the stuff for the poor people. Number 6 on your handout, right? You got it? Says Rashi, Chazar V'shona. The Torah repeats this mitzvah. In other words, Rashi is highlighting the fact that we already had this mitzvah last week. Right? Says the Rashi, the Torah repeats the mitzvah. Why? So Rashi says a concept which we find, la'avar aleihem b'shnei lavim. Let me just give you a bit of background here. There are sometimes, you know, we have 630 mitzvahs. Sometimes there are certain transgressions that if you do them, you're transgressing 2 averis. Why? Because the Torah chooses sometimes, for whatever reason, we don't know why, certain mitzvahs yes, certain mitzvahs not. But the Torah chooses to enforce certain transgressions and to make it a double transgression. Right? Sorry? An example? No, so according to Rashi, this is one example. That we had the mitzvah of not leaving the corner of the field last week. We have it again this week. Right? We have it again this week. And therefore, Rashi says, the reason the Torah is repeating this mitzvah is to actually give it a double whammy, to give it a double transgression, right? La'avor aleihem b'shnei lavim. So when a person harvests his entire field, doesn't leave anything for the poor people, not only has he transgressed one mitzvah from last week's parasha, he's now transgressed another mitzvah. Right? Okay. Then, that's point one. Then continues Rashi with the issue we discussed. It says like this. Amar Rav Avdimas Rabbi Yosef. Rav Avdimas says name Rabbi Yosef. Ma ro ha-kosuv litno be-emtsa ha-ragolim. Why did the Pasuk place this parsha, place this mitzvah in the middle of the festivals? Pesach va-atzeres mikan. On the one side you have Pesach and Shavuos. Rosh Hashanah v'yom ha-kippurin v'achag mikan. Rosh Hashanah yom kippur and Sukkot on the other side. And then in the middle, you got this thing about giving to the poor people. Says Rashi, Lelamedchot comes to teach you. Shekol hanoisein leket shikha upeo. Whoever gives leket, also shikha, Rashi adds in what you forget there in the field, and the corner of the field to the poor people, koroi, in a befitting way. Ma'alin olav, the Torah considers it, ki ilu bona beis hamigdash, if you've built the beis hamigdash, vihikriv korbanoisov besoichai, and you brought the sacrifices. In other words, that's why it's here. Because what's this parasha? This parasha is really about the Yom Tovim, but the Torah includes the bringing of korbanos, which means the Torah is talking about the time there was a Beis HaMikdash. Says Rashi, it's in the middle of the festivals to tell you that if you give leket, shikha, upeya, if you do this, it's like you built the Beis HaMikdash and brought a korban. Point two. Point three. The Rashi then comments on what the Pasuk says further on, that ta'azoy, you have to leave it for the poor people. Rashi says, this actually explains a very interesting halacha, because hanach lifne means you have to leave it there, v'hei milkatu, and they are going to collect it. V'hei l'chol l'saya l'echom, you're not allowed to help anyone. Which means if I have a field, and I've harvested, and then I leave the corner, I'm not allowed to be a nice guy, and I'll explain later why. And say, okay, now I'm going to wait for all the poor people to come. And when they come, I see a guy struggling this. I say to you, let me help you. I'll pick it up for you and you can take it. No. Torah says, and also then if I forget a sheaf there or whatever. No. Taz, you have to leave it there. And the poor person will come and take it. Then you're not allowed to help them. They have to take it themselves. One could ask, why not? I mean, it's a nice thing to do to help them. No, you're not allowed to. Why? We'll see later. Right? Okay. So, notwithstanding that what Rashi says is very beautiful, I mean, it's a nice thing to know, right? That if you give, put to the poor people, it's like you built a Beis HaMikdash and brought a korban. I mean, that's pretty heavy, right? We know how important building a Beis HaMikdash is. We know how important korbanos are. So if you give these agricultural presents to the poor people, it's like you built a Beis HaMikdash and brought a korban. That's wonderful. As wonderful as it is, this Rashi is totally not understandable, right? First of all, why didn't Rashi just stick with some of the simple upshotting? If Rashi was bothered, which all the Mefarshim were, of what this agricultural mitzvah is doing in the middle of the festivals, choose something simple. Choose it because it's a reminder, it's a time of harvest, you think it's the Omer, whatever. Choose something that's more pshat, right? What Rashi says seems very flowery, it seems very beautiful, but it's more drash. It's more like, I don't know, what's the word for it? It's more like philosophical, it's not the pshat of the pasuk, one would imagine, right? Number one. Number two, this that Rashi says, right, the Pasuk said ta'azog, you should leave it for the poor person, right? You should leave it for the poor person. That expression is in last week's parasha too. Over here, Rashi explains, what does it mean to leave it? Leave it for the poor person and don't even help them. They've got to collect it themselves, right? The only problem with that is a very pshat understanding of the word ta'azov, correct, right? But Rashi didn't explain it last week. Last week the Torah said exactly the same thing, ta'azov. And Rashi seemed to think we could figure it out on ourselves. We'll figure out what the word ta'azov means, right? But remember, Rashi only explains things which you have a problem with. Now, it could be the Gemara will explain ta'azov means all kinds of halachas, you have to leave it, you can't help, etc. Rashi last week said, Taza means leave it for them. You'll work out what that means yourself. I don't need to explain to you. It means leave it for them. That's exactly what it means. Suddenly, in this week's parasha, Rashi said, oh, Taza, you have to leave it for them. What does it mean? Why is the Torah saying Taza, we should leave it for them? Oh, it means, Hanach, you have to put it there. Don't help them. Don't collect it for them. They got to do it all themselves. What happened to last week's parasha? Exactly the same expression. Question clear? So, I've been quoting this lately a lot, but as I told you, the Rebbe used to learn Rashi in a very unique way. So he gives a very beautiful explanation of this Rashi, and also has a tremendous beautiful lesson that he learns at the end, which I'll share with you. He says the following. Rashi, in other words, like this. If this would be the only time that it said, the mitzvah of leaving this for the poor people, Rashi wouldn't have a problem at all, right? Rashi chooses not to learn like the other mafreshim. First of all, Rashi doesn't see in pshat why we would think that the Omer field is different. The Torah says you've got to leave of every field, you've got to leave a corner, so that's every field. That's more of a halachic analysis. Well, maybe it's different, there's exception to Omer, but that's not a pshat thing, right? If we are told in the Torah that every field you have to give peyah and leket and shikha, that would be every field, no exception, unless the Torah explicitly said an exception. So that's not a pshat thing for Rashi. Second of all, this thing that we have to remind people because it's the time of harvest, like the Eben Ezra says, Rashi chooses not to learn like that because why would you need to remind people? I mean, the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah gives us mitzvahs and expects us to remember, to keep them, right? Just because a guy learned the halachas of, it's like saying you learned the halachas of, tefillin, when one day, a week later you have to learn it again. I mean, if you have a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah, right? The Torah told us last week's parasha, doesn't mean when you learned last week's parasha, it doesn't matter. When it comes Shavuos, you're harvesting your field, you're an observant Jew, it's a mitzvah to leave stuff, you leave it. You'll remember to leave it. You don't need the Torah to remind you every time it comes a yontif, right? I mean, there's a general principle in the Torah which we learn that when it comes to yontif, you should learn the halachas relevant to that yontif. That's true, but that's not the Torah doesn't have to be reminded in context, right? We'll work out which mitzvahs are relevant to this yontif, and we'll keep them. It's not, you know. And generally speaking, Rashi's function is not to explain where things are placed, unless there's a special question. Generally speaking, it's not the derech of Rashi to tell us why different mitzvahs are in different places. And therefore, the whole question doesn't really begin. In other words, if on a pshat level, according to Rashi's approach, if this would be the only time that the Torah tells us to do the mitzvah of peyah, Rashi wouldn't come at all. Why? Yeah, it would be a philosophical question. What's it doing in the middle of the Yom Tovim? But that's not a pshat question. The Torah puts mitzvahs where it chooses to put mitzvahs. Right? It doesn't create a problem for the pasuk itself. The pasuk is telling us a very clear mitzvah. Either Torah plunked in the middle of the festivals, okay, has a reason, right? Okay. However, Rashi was bothered by a different question altogether, which is evident from the beginning of Rashi. Rashi's question was not, what is Leket Shikha or Peyar doing in the middle of the festivals? Rashi's initial question was, why is there repetition to this mitzvah altogether? That's the question. That's why Rashi begins with something else. Rashi begins, I have a question. Question is, why is it repeated? Not why, where is it repeated? Why is it repeated? Oh, it's repeated to make it two averis, not one. That's what Rashi says. That's why it's repeated. Ah. That now creates a question. In other words, the Torah has many sections in the Chumash where it talks about agricultural mitzvahs. In other words, this is not the first time. There was already a section where it talks about agricultural mitzvahs, right? But the Torah chose to repeat the mitzvah. So Rashi says, oh, one second. If the Torah is now repeating the mitzvah, and the Torah wants to repeat the mitzvah in order to tell you how important it is, in order to tell you that you transgress two transgressions if you transgress this mitzvah, now we have a question, so then why here? In other words, if it's only for repetition's sake, there's got to be a reason why specifically here. On the level where the Torah tells us the string of 613 mitzvahs, we have a general principle. The Torah chooses to do where it does it. Wherever the Torah decides to plunk us the mitzvah, it'll give it to us. But if the Torah already gave us this mitzvah, and there are other parshas of the Torah where it deals with agriculture, all the Torah wants to sort of give a booster, wants to now give it an extra thing, and tell us why. Why? And tell us that if you transgress this mitzvah, it's an extra avera. That's the reason it's repeated here. So why here? Like, it's totally out of context. Totally out of, right? comes Rashi, right? So Rashi can't give the answers that they all give, because that was never a question. That's not an issue for Rashi. Comes Rashi, and he chooses this, what Rav Avdimu says, and he says, no, Torah is telling us that if you give leket shecha peya, it's like you built a Beis HaMikdash and you brought a korban. Now, why these three mitzvahs? Why any mitzvah? I mean, that's a strange shot. What does that mean? Right? Not only why any mitzvah, note that there are plenty of times that people give away things to poor people. Why not the general mitzvah of tzedakah? Right? Why not the general mitzvah of ehavta l'reicha kamecha? General mitzvah of, I don't know, of not taking revenge. The general mitzvah of helping someone unload their donkey. There are plenty of giving mitzvahs. If giving to other people is so important that it's as if you built a Beis HaMikdash, you bought a korban, so why this mitzvah particularly? Right? He says a beautiful thing. He says like this. There's something very unique, something very different between this mitzvah of leaving the stuff from the field for the poor people and general tzedakah. And it happens on a number of levels. First of all, tzedakah is when you give money to a poor person, correct? General tzedakah. You give money to someone that needs. How did you get that money? Well, it depends. Now, the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, for example, that tzedakah is always very powerful. Why? Because the power of tzedakah generally, even not just agricultural means, generally, the power of tzedakah is the power of giving something up that's yours, right? It's a powerful thing. It's a hard thing for people to do. Not only that, in Tanya it says an expression like this, that when you give tzedakah, you're giving away something that you could sustain yourself with, right? Like giving yourself part of your life. Why is it part of your life? If I have $100, that $100 I could feed myself for a day, right? So I'm taking something that I could feed myself, I can keep myself alive, and I give it away, right? Which is why I'm saying this from Tanya, because today it talks about this concept in Kabbalah. We find that if someone, let's say, wants to fast for tshuva, right? He did an aveira and he wants to fast to atone. And nowadays we're actually discouraged from adding a lot of fast days. In Kabbalah, there's brought lots of different fast days, private fast days that people should do if they want to do tshuva for certain things and achieve an atonement. Today we don't do that. What do we do today instead? If someone wants to do tshuva and thinks they should have really fasted in order to really achieve atonement, today we say, no, don't fast, give tzedakah instead. Why? Because tzedakah is like a redemption of a fast. Explains why is a redemption of a fast? Because that's what tzedakah is. Tzedakah, you're taking something you could have fed yourself with and you gave it away. It's like a sort of a fast, right? Okay. Having said that, it is true with any money that a person has, right? Any money that I have that's mine, that I give away, I mean, I'm giving away something that I could have sustained myself with. However, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm giving away something that I worked so hard for. Right? I could have done an easy deal. I could have had an inheritance. Right? I could have had a gift. Someone gave me a gift. $1,000. I gave $100 away for tzedakah. Okay. It's hard, but leket shikha upeya, right? Leket shikha upeya is giving away something you worked hard for. You worked really hard for. You plowed, you harvested, you saw it grow. It's yours, right? A farmer gets attached to his or her field. Something they put in blood and sweat into, right? That's much harder to give away. So that's the chiddush of leket shechaper. Number one. Number two, there's something else that's unbelievably special. When you give tzedakah, right, Shulchan Aruch says that there's something we call toivas hanon, right? Toivas hanon. Toivas hanon means I do get something out of it. When I give tzedakah, I at least get to choose who I'm giving it to, correct? Now, there are guidelines in Shulchan Aruch, what takes precedence, that's true. There's a priority system, your family, your city, your ancestral, and so on and so forth, right? But at the end of the day, even if someone is a huge baal tzedakah, we find this all the time, people are very philanthropic and they give amazing amount of tzedakah, which is an amazing, amazing thing. But they also get to choose everyone has their pet tzedakah, you know, their pet project that they want to give to, right? Yeah? Which means that with other tzedakahs, and this, by the way, includes, there's even an agricultural tzedakah where this works. You know, every 3 years, there's something called Meister Oni. You've got to take 10% of your produce that you worked hard for, right? That you worked hard for, and you also an agricultural tzedakah, and you've got to give it to poor people. Besides, this is what we talked about today, right? Called Meister Oni, which Rashi doesn't mention here. Why? Even over there, you are giving away something you worked really hard for, but over there, you're allowed to choose which poor person you give it to, right? When it comes to giving away this stuff, leket shikhopeya, you don't get to choose. Any poor person that comes. Not only don't you get to choose, but you don't get anything out of it. You don't even get to feel good, which is the next Rashi. Rashi says, you know what the Torah says, ta'azov? Ta'azov means you're not even allowed to help them. You know, a guy, he gives away, okay, I'm giving away what I worked for, what I think. You know, let me at least make myself obvious. Maybe at least they should know who it's coming from. Or let at least me feel good that I have to give it away, but let me help the guy at least. You know, it's a good thing to help the guy. So he says, no, you've got to take yourself out of this thing completely. It's nothing to do with you. That's real giving, right? Nothing to do with you. You worked hard for it, you got to give it away. You don't get to choose who you give it to, and you're not even allowed to help them. There's nothing of you that is mixed in, says the Torah. That's why I'm putting it in between the Yomim Tov. Says the Torah, if you give leket shikcha upeya, if you give these three agricultural mitzvahs, which are unique in tzedakah, they're not just tzedakah, they're unique, that you're giving away what you worked hard for, and you take yourself out of the whole equation completely, it's just like you built a Beis HaMikdash, and you bought a korban. Why? First of all, building a Beis HaMikdash and bringing a korban is also something that someone has to do, which is very hard. It's a mitzvah which takes tremendous effort, right? It's a korban, we know. That's why in the Torah sometimes even something called a korban oni. There's a poor person's korban because animals were expensive. To bring a korban meant a sacrifice. So that's why giving away something that you worked hard for is as... And we know the greatness of sacrifices, right? But it's not only a korban, it's also as if you built the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is not even about you, the Beis HaMikdash is for Klal Yisrael. It's not a korban, at least, is a personal thing. So it's not just like you brought a korban. Korban is an amazing thing, it's even more than bringing a korban. It's like building a Beis HaMikdash. Which building a Beis HaMikdash, I have to work hard and I have to participate, but it's not for me, it's for everyone. I don't get any personal benefit from it. Korban, I do get a little bit of benefit from it, but the Beis HaMikdash, it's a communal benefit, right? And we know those two things of building bringing a korban and building a Beis HaMikdash are the most amazing things. I mean, the whole Beis HaMikdash was built to bring korbanos. The whole, we daven every day, I don't know how many times a day, that Hashem should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Says Hashem, if you give away that little bit of wheat that you worked hard for and you take yourself out of the equation, you don't get to choose, you're given to, and you're not even allowed to help them, it's as great as building a Beis HaMikdash and bringing a korban. That's why Rashi doesn't explain ta'azov in last week's parasha. Ta'azov doesn't have a problem in pshat, right? But over here, Rashi's bothered by a whole new thing. Rashi bothered why it's being repeated here. The repetition was the problem. And if it has to be repeated to add an extra avera, so why here? Says Rashi, because here's the Torah telling you that it's an amazing, that's as if you brought a korban to Beis HaMikdash. Says Rashi, that's why the Torah adds the word ta'azov. I don't have to explain it last week's parasha. Tazov means what Tazov. But the reason that it's repeated here is because Tazov comes to teach you how selfless this mitzvah is. You're not even allowed to help them. You've got to just get out of the way. That's how it works.
How relevant is that to still do this?
Well, we don't do it in Chutzla, right? No, but we have to get tzedakah. No, but
in Israel, I mean, I know.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works. It does apply today. I'm not sure how it's applied. I'm not sure the halachas. I'm not well versed. Yeah, no, they have Meister, they have all these things in Eretz Yisrael, but it's done in a particular way, so I don't know exactly how it's done. You have to, maybe it's redeemed with money, I'm not sure. I'm not expert on the way agricultural mitzvahs are applied in Eretz Yisrael. But I will tell you something of service's relevance. At the end of that talk, the Rebbe used to always learn a pshat way of Rashi, but then at the end he would bring out a lesson that we can learn from it, right? Lesson is, what is the Torah saying? It's an amazing, amazing lesson, right? Why is the Torah considering it as if we brought a korban and built a Beis HaMikdash? Because of how selfless this mitzvah is, how we get no benefit from it. You're giving away something you worked hard for, right? But in terms of quantity, it's not particularly philanthropic. I mean, peyah, biblically especially, the rabbis say you have to give a certain amount, but actually according to the Torah, you have to leave a little bit at the end of the field. It's a couple of stalks of grain that you left there that you forgot on the ground, and a couple of sheaves that you forgot to take when you collected all the harvest, right? Okay, so not huge at all. If a guy's in a sizable field, it's a very small contribution, right? nowhere like 10%. It's not even, it doesn't come to other. And yet the Torah still says that it's as if you built a Beis HaMikdash and brought a korban. Why? Because it's not about you. And therefore the lesson is that when we go out of our comfort zone, right, in any area of Yiddishkeit, when we do something that is hard for us, in other words, we do something that we put ourselves aside, no matter how small it is, the quantity doesn't matter. What does matter is that we forgot about ourselves. That's what matters. What matters is that we not worry, not focus so much on ourselves. That's what matters. The quantity doesn't even matter that much. The ikkar is the bittul. The main thing is the surrender. To say, I'm not looking for benefit. I'm doing it only because I'm serving Hashem. And therefore, it's hard. And I'm going to take myself out of the equation. I'm going to take my own ulterior motives out of the equation. My own self out of the equation. Then even if it's something very tiny, it's like you built a Beis HaMikdash and you brought a korban. Even if it's small. No problem, see you. I'll just finish off just a little bit, just on like just a very quick thing on Lag BaOmer. Just to mention, because it can't go away in a week with Lag BaOmer. So just to mention, Lag BaOmer is a very, very important yontif. I was going to go through the whole thing, but we don't have time for it. I'll do it another time. But just to mention Lag BaOmer is a very, very important yontif because, well, initially in Shulchan Aruch, actually, the origin of Lag BaOmer is just got to do with the fact that we know that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died during this time, and on Lag BaOmer they didn't die, right? They stopped dying. So the truth is, you look in Shulchan Aruch, you'll see that that doesn't turn Lag BaOmer into a day of tremendous festivities. All it does is it turns it into a day that we don't mourn anymore. And it's a little bit festive because we stop mourning, right? But in Kabbalah and in the last number of 100 years, it was revealed to us that it's much deeper than that, because Lag BaOmer is the yahrzeit of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai is all about, he reached a tremendous madrega on his yahrzeit, on his day of passing, and he asked specifically that the day of Lag BaOmer should be a day of his simcha, and that when we connect to Lag BaOmer, it should be a tremendous day of simcha. And he promised that those who can participate in his celebration were able to get part of his kedusha and holiness and pnimis and things like that. But what Rav Shimon bar Yochai is known for mainly, of course, he was a great Torah scholar, but he was also known for the concept of revealing the pnimius of Torah, the inner part of Torah, the depth of Torah, the esoterics of Torah. And just on that, the Bnei Yisoschar says the following. He says, one of the things we found about Lag BaOmer is that the Sfiras HaOmer, the Omer period, is divided into two parts. It's 22 days, and then, sorry, 32 days, I mean, and then 17 days, right? So Lag BaOmer is the beginning of the 17 days counting down to Shavuos, which the gematria of that is Lev Tov, good heart. Lev means the first part of Sfiras HaOmer. Lev refers to the Torah. That's, we know that in Kabbalah there's a concept called the 32 paths of wisdom. Lamed Beis Nesivus Chochmas, that's general Torah. Tov is like the primordial light. It says Hashem saw the light was good. So from Lag BaOmer starts a deeper connection to the Torah, which is connected also to the Kabbalah and the Pnimius HaTorah, the essence of Torah, and that's the concept of the Toy, which starts on Lag BaOmer. So on that note, try to join some celebration Lag BaOmer and have a very festive Lag BaOmer. Okay, we'll stop there. No problem.